Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. This is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Though these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict predecided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. Much like you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I'm similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number on the pin. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Everett for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. The unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the remedy and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you for that disclaimer. We appreciate you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you've ever heard of something called Quora, a website, www.quora.com. I love it. It's a wonderful platform that it's where you can share ideas and offer positions on different things. You'll have questions that will come into your inbox. You can answer them and what you're thinking. I use it for marketing what we do here at Your Remedy is in the Law. And I've been there for, oh, gosh, at least 2 years, maybe three, I don't know. And I have always had opposition in everything that I've ever pro-offered with regards to the fact that Your Remedy is in the Law. And showing them the law, what it says, in juxtaposition to what they're claiming is the law. And I don't participate in any kind of flaming back and forth. They'll flame against me, and I'll just simply reply, how nice, I've shown you the law, you're just showing me bad words or ill feelings. What is the law that supports your position? And, of course, you never hear from them again. So just the other day, I happened to stumble across someone who had found a comment that I had made and made some replies. And I can tell you he's a kindred spirit. I'm reaching out to him now for direct contact for possibly, you know, being a contributor here at Your Remedies in the Law. I'm going to share with you what caught my attention. And it's so spot on. It's the law. So his name is Clyde Habeck, H-A-B-E-C-K, and he wrote, quote, well, actually, this is a quotation. The Supreme Court has stated that the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment protect only those rights peculiar to being citizens of the federal government. It does not protect those rights which relate to state citizenship. The court case is Jones v. Kemmer, Federal Supplement, Volume 8, 29, page 1227. This is 1993. I'll repeat it. The Supreme Court has stated that the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment protect only those rights peculiar to being a citizen of the federal government. It does not protect those rights which relate to state citizenship. Continuing, the 14th Amendment created a subject of the federal government. This status is a privilege granted by the government. Underscore, bold, this status as a 14th Amendment citizen is a privilege granted by the government. Have you ever seen those commercials on TV? Well, the last time I saw them was probably 40 years ago, where it said, driving is a privilege. That was the big thing for the 1980s or 70s, something like that. Everything about the 14th Amendment, citizen, is about privileges. And what do you have to have in your hand, in your possession, to exercise a privilege? You have to have a license. Licenses, permission to do whatever. Continuing, this is from Maxwell versus Dow. You've heard me on this call before with it. We have cited these cases for the purpose of showing that the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States do not necessarily include all the rights protected by the First Eight Amendments to the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government. They were decidedly subsequently to the adoption of the 14th Amendment. And then from the slaughterhouse cases in 1873, so this is like what, 6 years, 7 years after the Civil War. The first clause of the 14th Amendment was primarily intended to confer citizenship on the Negro race, and secondly, to give definitions of citizenship of the United States and citizenship of the states. And it recognizes the distinction between citizenship of a state and citizenship of the United States by those definitions. The second clause of the 14th Amendment protects from the hostile legislation of the states the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States, as distinguished from the privileges and immunities of citizens of the states. The privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States are those which arise out of the nature and essential character of the national government, the provisions of its constitution, or its laws and treaties made in pursuance thereof, and it is these which are placed under the protection of Congress by this clause of the 14th Amendment. Now, these are not my opinions, but some Supreme Court of the United States statements. So as a 14th Amendment citizen, you are not necessarily protected by the Bill of Rights. As shown with what I just said and quoted, the citizens of the United States created by the alleged 14th Amendment are not part of We the People, since, as noted, they do not enjoy all the protections of the federal constitution, but according to the 14th Amendment, have their privileges and immunities controlled by the Congress. It's important to note when you read through the 14th Amendment, the word rights are not mentioned in that amendment. Do you have a driver's license? Do you have a hunting license, a fishing license, a marriage license? Any other kind of license. You are a 14th Amendment citizen. And we're here tonight to talk about correcting your status so that you are a state citizen, a Union state citizen specifically. And if we go with their recognition, their the United States' recognition of this in government, then we know that we can find that at section, at Title 8, Section 1502 of the United States Code. There's a place when we're talking about these licenses that ought to get your attention. In W.W. Cargill Company versus State of Minnesota, and this is 1901, so it's well over a century ago, never been overturned. The acceptance of a license, in whatever form, will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute or with the regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. End quote. So when you consider all of this, You need to understand that you have it in front of you, two playing fields. And you have, by right, by birthright, the opportunity to play in both playing fields. In 1876, United States versus Cruikshank, quote, "It is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties and claims protection from both." He owes allegiance to the two departments, so to speak, and within their respective spheres, that's jurisdiction, must pay the penalties which each exacts for disobedience to its laws. In return, he can demand protection from each within its own jurisdiction or sphere, end quote. So what does this mean? Well, it means that the famous January 6th people arrested at the so-called insurrection in Washington, D.C., actually have a problem because they are on the land of Washington, D.C., and have to obey by those laws. But they also can demand the protection afforded them in Washington, D.C., which, of course, is no attorney that is representing them would ever think to do. The outcome of all of this is that when you learn and internalize the differences upon which the land your feet rest and upon whose citizenship you assert and evidence will depend entirely upon how the government will treat you. They will fight with you tooth and nail to ignore and defeat you. Is there a remedy there should this happen? You betcha. The remedy is found in Title 42, 1983. 1985, 1986. It's also found in Title 40, 241 as well. And that's where you have the conspiracy of more officers of the law who will collude. The police, the prosecutor, and the judge, all colluding. So you have Title 42, Title 41, that are there as your remedy. In Frankenhauser versus Rissa, quote, "It is the manner of enforcement which gives Title 42, 1983 its unique importance. For enforcement is placed in the hands of the people. Each citizen acts as a private attorney general who takes on the mantle of the sovereign, guarding for all of us the individual liberties enunciated in the Constitution." So tonight with GW, tomorrow with John being the point of the spear for the litigation section of what we do, you're going to learn how important this truly is and its effects and how it can be your remedies, regardless of what's going on in your issue. There are two cases on remedies that you need to know about. Schurer versus Rhodes. This is 1974 decision. You'll find it 416 U.S. 232. Quote, "U.S. Supreme Court held that state officials acting under color of law may be held personally liable for the injuries or torts they cause, and that official or sovereign immunity may not be asserted," end quote. And then Warnock versus Peso County, Texas. This is a 1997 posting, 116 F3rd, 776. Quote, "When a state officer acts under color of law in a manner violative of the federal Constitution, becomes in conflict with the superior authority of that Constitution, and he is in that case stripped of his official or representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequences of his individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. End quote. So with having said all this in preparation for GW, it's my pleasure at this time to turn the call over to GW. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey. All right. So, excellent. I just wanted to say I've had had an amazing week. Number of really interesting things. It seems like things just keep on building and building and building out here. With people's interest in getting things done right, we've had a lot of we've had a lot of sessions where we've, you know, where we're talking about correcting your status, and some of the other crazy people out there that are doing a lot of damage in the community, the patriot community, you'd say, or the truth community, by putting out information that's really sketchy and just the flippant way that they do some of the things that they do. And we've seen some of their people get arrested, some of their people get killed. I had Michael, I had a great conversation, and I'm working with a gentleman that he's here in my area, and we met up. He was referred to me by another group that I've been working with, that is another very patriotic group, and it's a doctor and his wife, and they took me out to dinner the other night. It's kind of funny because they had been through David Strait's process, and I thought it was going to be here we go, somebody that's really keen on David Strait. But as it turns out, boy, what a great contact. This guy gave me a lot of info, but, Bonnie now, David Strait's wife, Bonnie Strait, has been sentenced to, I think it's 5 or 6 years in prison. And this has put a real strain on his community. He's had to hear just recently cancel his last, conference was going on, and refund everybody's money. And so it was very interesting meeting with him and going over the procedure and, kind of tuning things up and correcting things. And they want to get a lot of extra things done. They want to, he's very convinced now to get the whole financial structure done. And so I'm going to be taking care of that for him. So, it's just very, very interesting about, the people that God just is bringing in. And this guy, this particular doctor spent a lot of time helping David, try to straighten out the process in which he delivers his information, putting it into more of a flow and everything. And David could never get it, what the doc told me. And, which is kind of interesting. Okay. Anyway, that was kind of, a cool thing. I don't know, we have a number of people, I'm sure, on the call, and I'm sure we have some people that have already corrected their status that might be on the call, and we have others that probably are listening in that, are thinking about this or wanting to go forward. And one of the things that I would suggest, and that you be very, very proactive about, is if you're going to get your status corrected, you want to do, you don't want to do anything but the fast status process. The fast process, which is, it's done within about 3 hours of you. Once you get your appointment, get through it at a Secretary of State's facility. It is a situation where you're going to have the passport card within about 3 hours. Okay. So the reason I'm stressing this, I used to give it as an option for all my people that come to me, apart from, your remedies in the law. Okay. I used to give the option, but now they're starting to get really funny with when we send the affidavit in ahead of time. There's people that are getting all these letters now, and it's just adding more angst to people's lives. And also, they're so backed up on putting the affidavits in to the actual process that we know that from some very good people that I trust and Michael trusts implicitly, that when we do the fast process through one of the facilities, everything has to be uploaded in real time, including the affidavit. It has to go on record in real time, which is really crucial and a good, it gives a lot of people a lot of peace of mind. I just took the only time there are some facilities out there that once you go through the process and you process and get your passport book, okay, you won't get the card the same day. Okay, so there's only some limited facilities. One of them is in Denver, Colorado. Okay, so one of my clients, I'll actually say his name because it's kind of fun to talk about. His name is Michael Costner, and actually his uncle, his name is Kevin Costner, and he was the gentleman that was the star in Dances with Wolves and a number of other movies. He's still in movies. But so took Michael through this whole process, his nephew, and he flew in from Europe. We couldn't find him any appointments in Tennessee, which he flew in to see a lot of his family. And so he ended up not even being able to get an appointment at one of the facilities over in Atlanta, which was close. But he ended up flying over to Denver, Colorado, and going into their office there. He got an appointment. So anyway, I wanted to put that out there because that's something that if you go through the process, you're probably going to want to do at this stage. Is do the faster process, even though it's a little bit of a fun time getting that appointment right now, because things are getting. There's a lot of people just getting their passports and their passport cards. Oh, I didn't finish it up. At Denver, they don't do the emergency for the card the same day. It comes 6 weeks later in the mail. So. That's just something you'll have to, you'll have to muddle through if you're going and you're up in the Denver area. But other than that, I wanted to say that the faster process is something that it's not real hard to do. It's you've got to acquire a international flight going out of the country in about less than 14 days. Now, the good news is one of my clients that is a globetrotter actually gave me the remedy for that. Well, there's two different separate websites, and we'll give them to anybody that's going through the process with your remedies in the law, that you can buy anywhere from $12 to $30 ticket that actually meets all the criteria, but it's really a throwaway. And it's a very inexpensive way to get something that passes muster when the QR code's read and the information. And it's actually legitimate, but you can't find it. So it's a very inexpensive throwaway, so you don't have to go out there and actually buy an international ticket and then get refunded or, go through the hassle of all that. So having said that, let's see other things going on. Just a lot of people, getting interested that are, have had some difficulties about, in certain areas of their life, and they're wanting to get their, status corrected. So, this call, of course, is all about that. I know Michael probably touched on it just a little bit, but went over a lot of the Supreme Court cases and appellate court cases that, give some of the evidence, some of the receipts that validate and verify the fact that you can correct your status. There's two distinct citizenships in America, one of the state and one of the federal government. And you want, and if you really, really, really understand it, and you want it to be free, you want the one of the state, not the one of the federal government. And of course, as you probably know, you can go walk around the street, talk to almost anybody, and if you ask them that question, they would have no clue. But if you ask them if they were a U.S. citizen, about, good 99% of them would say, yes, I am. U.S. citizen. United States citizen. So that is not the one of the states. So so I hope that helps out. What we do is we help you get the whole process done, the paperwork, all of the forms, and we help you through the process of getting helping you with the mindset you need to get, but also acquiring a passport and a passport card, which will replace the one that you either have or you don't have, that will have the corrected information on it, not on the card and not on the passbook itself on the face, but it will have the corrected information about you when they run it. Okay, when an official from the government that's either at the airport or you're going through customs or you're alongside the road getting stopped by a Leo or a policeman, you will be able to use your card or your passport. Yeah, but that's why we get the card at the same time that we get the passport, is to use a card when it comes to daily activities or going from state to state, instead of using your still retain a driver's license, but instead of using that license in that little altercation, you can use the passport card instead. We teach you how to do that safely, effectively, and without drama. Okay, and so that's the overall kind of foundational thing with correcting your status. So, Michael,
yes, sir.
If you'd like to, you can open up the lines for people that want to ask questions, or maybe we have some new people here, and they're interested in asking some questions.
Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2. I see Norm first, Charlie following. Those of you on Freedoms Radio, look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click into it, and then type away your comment or question. Underneath that rectangle, center right, I believe you'll see a place to put your name and some other information, then hit submit. And then when you do that, it'll pop up on my end, and I'll be happy to give voice to your comment or your question. So let's start with Norm. Go ahead, buddy.
I just a little clarification on what I just heard explained. I keep my driver's license, but if I'm stopped by a cop on the road, I give them the card. Is that?
Yeah, that's what I would do if I was similarly situated, and you've got your passport, your brand new corrected passport card, okay, and you have an understanding about the fact that you've corrected your status to being an American national rather than a United States citizen or a U.S. citizen. Because there's two separate, distinct citizenships in America here. And so the American national is congruent with a state citizen. That's small s state. So, Norm, do you understand when I say, the difference between this capital S and the small s when it comes to a state?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So, you're correcting your status over to a different jurisdiction. All right. Now, you still, believe it or not, have the benefits of being protected by both jurisdictions. Okay, both governments. But you get to claim the one that you want to operate in at that time. And most people don't want to claim the United States. and the capital S state that they are from, that is, of course, part of the corporation. They want to claim the small s, that's one of the union states. Okay, as their jurisdiction for where they get their rights. And of course, this is all about using your God-given rights that are backed up by the Constitution, where you have the right to travel from point A to point B, and, freely have the right to travel. And so.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you so far, and I understand all that. But I'm just wondering about the documentation that I keep. So I keep the driver's license, and I can use that driver's license to open a bank account if they ask me for it. I keep
Correct.
My Social Security card. I keep my Social
Correct.
Security benefits if I have them and all that. None of that changes.
Nope. None
Am
of
I correct
changes
in that assumption?
Yes, you are correct. Now, is this your first time on the call?
No, this is not my first time on the call, but the first time I'm really asking questions to this depth.
Okay.
Because it's getting time to make a final decision, and I've had some of these kind of questions in my mind. So I keep my Social Security card and Social Security number and all that.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
You're going to make me say it three times.
Keep the driver's license. Yeah.
And he wants to hear if you're going to change your story, GW.
You want to hear if I'm changing my story. So if you ask me again, I'll say the same thing.
So the only thing really that changes is if I'm stopped by law enforcement, I give them the card instead of the driver's license.
Yes, sir.
Am I correct in that assumption? Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Third time.
Because, you're correct in that assumption, because when you hand them the card, the passport card, for one thing, you're not handing them a license, okay? So a license, a driver's license, driving is a commercially regulated activity that is basically commercially regulated for, guess what? Their property and their franchises, okay, which they have labeled U.S. citizen. So they've labeled you and categorized you as a U.S. citizen, and you now have the obligation, okay, as a U.S. citizen, to operate with the licenses they want you to have. And so if you're not a U.S. citizen, okay, and you're a state citizen or American national, now you have the freedom and the right to travel that the Constitution gives you. So the whole thing is, why would you want to handle, you know, as long as you know that and you can stand on that and you can deliver that when you're asked, why would you hand them a license? Because then you're ceding the jurisdiction. Right.
But my obvious question comes back. The cop's going to say, I ask you for a license, sir. And I'm going to respond, I'm sorry, this is all that I have. Why don't you check it? Is that
right.
the correct
yeah,
response?
That would be a correct response. Also, you can, you know, you can just say, sir, I don't drive, which is a commercially regulated activity. I travel, which is my God-given right. And so here's my travel card. Please run that, you know. And there's times where these cops are going to get loud with you, and they're going to get try to get forceful, okay? And they're going to ask you questions like, have you ever had a license? You know, things like that. And, you know, I mean, you have to really keep your cool and be able to deliver and say, you know, things like, well, I don't believe that's relevant to this conversation. Especially when
and if you'd like to pursue this officer, I'd like to exercise my Fifth Amendment right to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that, it's going to create
officer,
that's for sure, in some cases.
Officer, the State Department of the United States issued me this Real ID under the Real ID Act, and I was told and instructed to present this to any government official, whether it's law enforcement, a zoning officer, whatever. I was told to present this, and this is what I'm presenting to you. If it's not acceptable, then you need to do what you're going to do. If you want to arrest me, then arrest me. If you want to deprive me of my rights under color of law, deprive me of my rights under color of law. We'll handle this in court. I'm not going to handle it on the side of the road. I'm going to do anything and everything you tell me to do, sir.
Yeah. At my age, that, you know, I don't want to create more problems for myself in this particular effort.
Sure.
I'm 90 years old, and I just don't want to go through going to jail all
that
time.
Wow. Wow, you are not, Norm, you are 90?
Yes, I am.
Ah, God bless you, sir. I mean.
Well, born in 1934.
Wow. Wow, wow. And, yeah. Well, you've got a, you just keep on going, guy. I mean, you're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, I guess you answered my question, so we'll move on to the next fellow, I guess.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in and asking the question. That was been a delight to talk with you.
Appreciate
it. Alrighty. Thank you. All right, next is Charlie.
Hello. Hey, I really appreciate how you both, you know, go beyond the question and go to scenarios. Obviously, it's a teaching call, so I'm appreciative. So let's see. First thing I was going to ask about is having protection under each citizenship, you know, we choose which citizenship we're operating under at the particular time, as the example you gave. Regarding, like, Social Security would be an example. You know, on their application for benefit, it'll, you know, and there'll be other situations, I'm sure. are you a U.S. citizen, or are you a naturalized citizen, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, before changing your status, there's only one answer to that, as I, far as I can tell. I would be a U.S. citizen. Now, if I was doing a form that asked that question, you know, after changing my status, whenever I can do that, well, let's just say I'm applying for Social Security benefits at that time. I changed my status, applying for Social Security benefits. State citizen or American national is not going to be on that form. But am I protected then as a U.S. citizen?
Well, yeah. Okay. So if I understand your question correctly, you're just asking that you're going to, at some point after you've corrected your status, you want to apply for your Social Security benefits. They're going to have the form. It's probably not going to have the option on the form to put in there, are you a U.S. citizen? Are you a national? You know, are you a blah, blah, blah? So you're probably right. It probably won't. Now, if it's not going to hurt if you actually do put that down there, because they're not giving you an option, for one thing. And if you're going to try to ask questions of some lowly administrative agent within the Social Security Administration, they're going to look at you cross-eyed, probably. Okay.
Sure.
It's going to have to go up a chain, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be one of these situations where probably with the Social Security Administration, they're not going to give you a satisfactory answer.
Right.
The good news is, you know your status, you know you've corrected it, you've got the affidavit. You're just going about that because there's nothing, you know, they didn't give you a remedy. And you can push that, though. I mean, if you really want to get, if it's really bugging you, you can push it and spend the time and you know, take it up the chain with the administration and hopefully get some kind of outcome, or they can put an addendum with the actual application or something. I know we're doing that with driver's license, okay? So good news is, anybody that want, you know, I'm not going to go over it right here on this call, but I will tell you this, we've been successful with everybody that's gone through so far that wanted to do that with their driver's license. Okay.
Okay.
With the instruction, you know, when they follow the instruction we gave them, that we give them. Okay. And I can, you know, I'll be happy to go on the line with anybody that's already a client, you know, through Michael, that's already done this and they want to, you know, they want to have a little consultation with me and Michael and yourself to, you know, be able to present that the right way to the DMV, whoever it is in your state that's part of the licensing process. So that's not a problem. We'll help anybody do that.
Okay, that's good to know for the future. Yeah. You know, it was mentioned just a little bit ago. I think Michael had said, "Well, just present them your real ID, your pass," and he was referring to the passport card as I took it.
Correct. Correct.
Many states, now Oklahoma is a state that so far is not, I think we got another year before we have to have a real ID if we want to apply or go to a federal building.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we'll have the option to not get one. I don't know that answer. Right now we do. Is it important to avoid it as long as possible? I don't know exactly what implications that has, or if you have an answer to that. But that is a question in my mind. It may not be.
Okay, so avoid what? What are you talking about?
Getting, you know, at driver's license renewal time.
Okay.
My guess is sometime late 24. It will be required, if you wanted to renew, you have to get the real ID. driver's license. Does that make sense?
All right. Yeah, yeah.
I suppose most people have them now. I don't have to have one. Is it important for me? I mean, what, you know what danger there is in having one?
Having the real ID driver's license?
Yes, yes.
Well, okay, so first off, if you know your stuff, if you really understand your rights, okay, you can prevail in whatever course you're going to take with this, because for one thing, all I'm going to tell you is that they have to, they will have to comply with your requests. Okay. And this is part of a thing that I won't get into right now because it's part of the, prep we give to the people that, you know, that are clients. And have you already signed up, sir?
I have not yet. I'm waiting for finances, you know. So,
okay.
Basically.
Okay. All right. But, this puts you in a much better place for them to have to capitulate to you. Let's just put it that way. Once you've corrected your status.
Okay.
Puts a little bit more binding. It's a little tougher for them to prevail and just strong arm you, because now you've got your corrected status. Now you're a true boss.
Got it.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just another brief question. When I got on, Michael, you were talking about a website. I heard the .com. I didn't get the front part
Quora.
Of it. That,
Quora. Q-U-O-R-A. Quora.
Okay.
.com.
Thank you.
And if you look for Michael Edward, I don't know how many of you you'll find up there, but look for a young Marine, a handsome, ruggedly handsome young Marine in his dress blues. And that's my son. I post his picture because it's a lot better looking than mine.
Yeah, I was there once looking up one of the it's been a while back, and I think you had sent me a link, and so I got on. But then another time I went, and I'm kind of thinking you have to be a member or something, maybe. So I don't know. I haven't been back since.
Anyways. All right, anything else, Charlie?
Nope. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And Mr. David, you're next.
Hey, Michael. Hey, GW. How y'all doing?
Fantastic.
Hey, doing good.
Good, good. Hey, I am a client. I contracted y'all to help me start, 5-6 months ago. Got my updated, corrected passport back in April.
Awesome.
Passport. I've done a lot of research to try and find out if there's a way to get confirmation of my corrected political status, and I think I found a way. And Michael, I sent you several emails a week and a half ago, and I'd love to get together with you and GW and go over those.
I think
it's a solution that will give your clients, obviously it benefits me in no way, but it could benefit y'all and your team tremendously if we can work through that together. There's multiple different ways to get confirmation of that status, I believe. And I've already submitted, Michael, the first method of that to the United States Department of State. It'll take 12 to 16 weeks, but there's another method that's much quicker. And I think it's something that I can really help. Everything that you all are talking about here benefit your listeners with confidence. And in addition to that, I've got two different law enforcement officers in my area that are willing to run my passport card and let me take pictures of the screens, probably edit it if there's anything that would incriminate them. I don't want to in any way incriminate the LEOs.
Sure, right.
And at the point in time that I can get that done, I'm absolutely more than willing to share that with y'all, to share with everybody, because that information is priceless.
Sure.
And so,
that's great.
Michael, if you could forward those emails to GW and set up a call me and let's set up a time to talk this week, that'd be awesome.
All right. GW is 3 hours behind me, 2 hours behind you. And if I'm not mistaken, GW kind of likes to sleep in a little bit in the mornings. Why don't you give me a call your time, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, just prior
That's
to
fine.
You calling me? Prior uh-huh. to you calling me, resend those pertinent emails to me, boom, 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 so that I have them that I can forward to GW right away and then try to arrange for a phone call within the next hour or two after that.
I'll do one better. Last 2 weeks ago, I sent them to you in 4 emails.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put everything in 1 email. So that you can forward 1 email to GW. How's that?
That'll work wonderful.
There you
Thank
go.
You. And listen,
Perfect.
there's another thing that you can do is you can get on the interstate and have one of your Leo friends follow you, crank it up to 80, 85, 90, and let him pull you over. And it's his choice whether or not he wants to give you a ticket. He doesn't have to, but he can run your plate. He can run your real ID.
I agree. I will get that email with everything in 1 email to you in the morning so that you can get a GW, and then I'll call you late tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
And look forward to I really think it may be a tremendous benefit for everything that y'all are offering. I'm delighted to have my political status corrected, and I just think this is something that will benefit y'all and your clients, okay?
Thank you so much. I look
cool.
forward to that. David, appreciate you.
You bet. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
You bet.
All right, thank you. Norman, you're back up.
Yeah, I got another little question that came up pursuant to the conversation I've been listening to. You mentioned that an affidavit is provided once the change your status is completed. Is that right?
I will provide you.
Go ahead,
GW.
Well, what I was saying is an affidavit is generated during the first part of the process. That's the very first thing, is signing the affidavit. And it's a specially prepared affidavit.
Okay, and that has my name and all the other pertinent
Correct.
Information on it. So if there's any question with the ID card, I can pop out the affidavit and I says, here it is, signed by official government resources and so on. And so there you go. Is that
okay.
pretty much it?
Well, I mean, you could do that. You could do that. Absolutely. You know, I've used the affidavit along with other instruments in a number of incidents. So, yes, you can, and it does work.
What other instruments would I have at my disposal at that point in time?
Yeah, well, see, okay, so if you correct your status, okay, you not only have your passport card and your passport, which are really great to give them, all right, but you'll also have, and we'll provide you with another instrument from the IRS, which is a certification. It's called a W-8-B-E-N, and it is an official certification of your status as a non-resident alien in relationship to the United States, and it also says for United States tax withholding, which you probably don't have to worry about that anymore, I'm imagining, but it's good for other things also, okay, besides just, taxes, because that form is, it also we use an affidavit that goes on the back of that form. It's attached to the back of that form. So it has the form, and then it also has an affidavit that's attached to it.
So are you saying that paper you're talking about states that I am now changed my status to a state lowercase s citizen, and therefore I am no longer required to file income tax returns? Does it tell me that, or does it say that?
Well, it doesn't say that on the actual form, okay? It doesn't say that on the form, but you have to put two and two together, okay? So there's a Supreme Court case, I believe it was in 1982, and this one Supreme Court case, maybe Michael might be looking at it and give you the actual coordinates for it, but that case says this. It says, unless the defendant can prove he is not a United States citizen, it says, it stops right there, and then it says this right afterwards, okay? It says, unless the defendant can prove he is not a United States citizen, the IRS has the right to pursue and determine a tax liability. All right, so think about what that says right there and what would be the opposite. Okay, so it's saying that unless that defendant can prove he's not a United States citizen, then the IRS does have the right to pursue him and determine a tax liability for him. But if he's not a United States citizen, the IRS doesn't have the right to pursue and determine a tax liability. So
yeah.
how would you prove you are not a United States citizen? All right? So I'm asking that question, and I'll answer it for you here. You prove it with an affidavit, for one thing, because an affidavit is the highest form of evidence and fact that you can put into any judicial or administrative matter, okay? And it can only be overcome by another affidavit that's filled out from the opposing parties with firsthand knowledge of the facts, again, signed under penalty of perjury and attesting that, you know, they know the firsthand facts about this. Well, they're never going to do that, Norman.
I understand what you're saying there. And, yeah, you answered my question pretty much because I'm going to be protected through other ways, too, because of corporation of soul and all that sort of thing that you are probably aware of.
There you go.
Also does not require any taxes on my part. So, yes, that affidavit would then actually increase the authority of that. So that's fine. That's what I kind of wanted to hear you say, and that thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. No problem.
GW, what you brought up was a 1982 court decision. It's U.S. versus Slater, 545 Fed Sup 179-182, quote,
okay.
Unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine a tax liability, end quote.
That's there you go, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Next is Miss Jennifer. Go ahead. You have a question? Jennifer Sue.
Oh.
Regarding the thing from the DMV regarding licensing. What was that?
No. I just want to say at one point and I said, well, what sort of licenses do illegals have? And they said, they give them a license that doesn't have the, I've forgotten. You know how they're going to make everyone have those other licenses with the thing in the corner? What's that called? I wasn't going to say anything, but the other gentleman was talking about the licenses that are coming out in a year where you have to have
right
certain license that has all your information on it. And you only get one of those if you're a U.S. citizen. If you're an illegal, they give you one without that, that still like a license, a regular license, before that law comes into effect. So they said to me, because I'm an American national, that's the sort of, I have to have a license, and that would be the sort I would get, is the one that they give the illegal.
Okay.
Anyway.
Exactly. All the funny stuff.
Anyway, that was all. I had put my... I was just wondering if I could have a copy of the letter. I texted Michael about the letter you were talking about earlier at GW. If I could give to the DMV, you were just mentioning earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Have we ever talked about that on a separate call?
No, but I'd like to.
Okay, look. Let's do that on a separate call sometime and get, you know.
Okay.
Just ask Michael to, you know, arrange the call for the three of us.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Just shoot me a text tomorrow when you're up and running. Remember sometime after 1 or 2 o'clock our time. Okay?
Okay. I did just send it tonight. So you want another one tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll keep it. I've already opened this, so it won't have a red thing next to it.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Kent, Brother Kent, go ahead.
Okay. Good evening, gentlemen. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, several things. I spoke to somebody yesterday. I came on the call late, so I don't know if you covered this. I heard you say something about David. I don't know if that was David Strait you were talking about. In any case, I was talking to somebody who told me that one of Anavon Wright's students was recently arrested as a state citizen under her program and was charged with impersonating someone that he was not and couldn't be. Do you know anything about that?
No, I'm not surprised. But I don't. No, I haven't. I haven't been following anything. I can find out pretty fast. I'll reach out to one or two of the people, but somebody that gets all the backroom chatter. But,
oh, okay.
I've been so busy helping people do real stuff that there's some big stuff out there that I'm involved with, so I don't get a chance always to, you know, but please fill me in.
Okay, well that's all I have to fill you in with at this point in time, because that's all he knew. But he said the gentleman was arrested and charged with impersonation, being someone that he is not and could not be. So I just wondered again, you know, I know you've talked about her in the past. You've talked about David Strait.
Yeah.
You've talked about Anavon Wright. I was just wondering if you heard anything about that and what the foundation would be for a charge of impersonation as a state citizen. Now, I don't have all the facts. I don't know what else he or she might have done. So,
yeah.
In any case, all right,
yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All righty. Thank you. Charlie, did you come back for another bite at the end? I'm sorry, Kent.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, I'm not.
Kent, were you?
No, I'm not.
Charlie, I'm muting you back out again. Go ahead, Kent. Sorry.
Okay, so based on something that Charlie said before he comes back on, he was saying that he was a U.S. citizen before he changes his status. Well, first of all, he's correcting his status, and I would never say or admit to having been a U.S. citizen. So anybody listening on this call that heard that and might take that to heart, if they really don't understand this subject in any great detail, no one should, and, you know, if you have a comment to the contrary, Greg, I'd like to hear it, but I don't see why anyone would want to say at any point in time, if they agree and are listening to this call, that they are a U.S. citizen or were a U.S. citizen. Would you agree with that?
No, not necessarily, because you can change around and be anything you want to be it depends on the level of chess you're able to play at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, for one thing, I don't have any problem saying I was a U.S. citizen right up into the point where I was not in March of 2008. I don't have a problem with that because there's two distinct citizenships in America. There's one of the state and there's one of the federal government. And I was confused and actually acquiesced into the one of the federal government up until the point where I knew that it was not what I wanted to be, and I knew how to correct it. So that's what I would say if similarly situated.
Okay, so when you correct it.
Comment so you, first before you continue.
Yeah.
What's the scenario under which somebody, who's asking if you're a United States citizen first? Judge? Guy on the side of the road? Your mother? Who?
Well,
context is everything.
Right. Pick the first two you gave an example of. But when you're changing, when you're correcting it, not changing.
No, no, we're not leaving this. No, Kent, we're not leaving this. Who's asked the question?
I said, I answered the question. I said, take the first two.
You said, okay.
Judge,
well, Your Honor,
Leo,
that's a very good question. That's a very good question, Your Honor, and I'd be happy to answer it to you. You would like an answer. I noticed that you failed to stipulate one of the three definitions of United States. So when you ask me if I am a United States citizen, which definition of the three that I'm aware of anyways through Black's Law are you in reference to?
Okay, and wait for him to answer the question.
Not another peep out of my mouth until you answer the question, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
The guy on the side, the law enforcement officer on the side of the road, if he comes up with that, comes up with something silly or nonsensical, like, oh, you're one of those sovereign citizens. Well, officer, that's a good question. Are you accusing me or asking me? Or I'm not clear. But if you're accusing me of being a sovereign citizen, you've not been educated in your schooling with regards to the fact that you cannot be a sovereign citizen. There's no such thing. You are either one of the sovereignty or you're a citizen. And if you're a citizen, you're either a Union State citizen or you're a United States citizen. And are you aware also, officer, of something called deprivation of rights under color of law? That's an important question. You might want to call your loss prevention officer for your employer before we continue these discussions. What do you mean? Well, you, in fact, have deprived me of my rights under color of law. That's not been proven in court yet. It will be, and it won't be a problem for me to prove it. And the penalties for that, especially since you're under arms, I'm referring to that Glock on your hip, and the radio that you have that you can bring in lots of other Glocks in here in a moment, that's under great threat and duress. So I'm just encouraging you, officer, kindly, if you would, to contact your loss prevention officer. I don't want anyone injured financially in what will come out in court. The entire time I'm keeping my hands clearly on the steering wheel or hanging them out the side of the window, whichever, so that they're completely, I'm incapable of being harmful to them. Back to you, Kent.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation.
Mm-hmm.
On that same subject before, when you were talking about the side of the road and you were giving some scenarios, as you just did again, regarding what you might say to that Leo, this time you said it in a little more detail about the risk management department. But I think that also before that conversation gets carried too far with somebody that's going to be obstinate and is carrying a weapon, you would suggest to them that they would bring in their commanding officer. Would not that be an appropriate way to handle that rather than create a problem on the street?
Well, if you're in the free state of Florida, it's totally unnecessary. They pretty much expect you to be carrying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I'm saying.
Go ahead.
But if you were in New York or, you know, one of those blue states, the expectation would not be the same.
No, I'd have both my hands hanging out the window, and I would advise the officer right away. I have on my right hip Airweight Smith & Wesson J-frame, 5 rounds of hydrogel shock ammunition. And they are hot loads. On my left hip is a Colt 1903, and on my left belt loop is a Buck utility knife, and in my right front pocket is a gentleman's knife with corkscrew in case we have a wine party. You never know when you're caught with a bottle of wine that you can't open.
Okay, now I want to
finish
what you were saying.
The point that I'm making is be truthful, be honest, be relaxed. You're in charge. They've got the gun, so respect the gun. Expect them to be ignorant, not knowledgeable in the law.
That's right.
So, be accommodating as you can.
I get what you're saying about you have no problem, Greg, admitting that you were a U.S. citizen up until March 2008. But once you've done your status correction papers, you're actually saying that you're doing this non-pro-tunk now for then, or back to the beginning, ab initio. So you're actually saying by that affidavit, at least my understanding, that
You haven't gone. Listen, Kent. You haven't gone through the process yet, have you?
Your process.
Okay. Right. All right. So if you went through somebody else's process and had that on there, we don't do that. Actually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can do that if you want to, but there's no need. Okay. Our current affidavit does not. It doesn't go back non pro tunk.
Okay.
Mine does.
So you.
Well, okay, so Michael's does, but it so I mean if you want to share that with Kent, you know, because he seems very concerned about it, then you can use that one, Kent.
Michael, does yours go back ab initio and non pro tunk?
Yes. Well, ab initio has to do with the idea of itself, and nunc pro tunc has to do with only correcting your specifically to correct your records.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm instructing the State Department of the United States to correct their records nunc pro tunc. I'm advising them that I've had this status since birth, ab initio.
Right. Okay. So there is a slight difference in what Greg is saying and what you're suggesting.
I don't think we're disagreeing.
No, I didn't say.
No, we're not disagreeing. And I would, Kent, at some point I would suggest try to get it done. Just try to at least get it done. You've come on these calls almost every single week, and you ask a lot of questions, but you've never ever moved forward and gotten anything done. It's a little aggravating to me, to be honest with you.
Okay, well that's fine, but you don't know exactly what I'm doing, and you don't know exactly what my skill level is and how I can.
Tell me what you're doing. Hey, tell me what you're doing, man. Tell me what you're doing. I'd love to hear it tonight.
No, you're not going to hear it tonight. So I.
Okay.
You know,
he's collecting evidence.
Listen, if you don't want me to ask any more questions or it irritates you, fine, I won't ask any more questions. That's okay with me, you know. I mean, if that's what you would prefer, then that's fine. I thought my questions actually enhanced the conversation and the teaching session. But if that's not the case or you don't think it's the case, then just tell me.
We love you, Kent. We want your questions.
Okay, so one of my next questions is, and then I'm going to tell you basically reiterate a short story of something that just happened. When you talk about the affidavit being the best proof, as you just answered one of the callers, Greg, being the best proof you could have, I think that better proof, and you know, I'm interested in your comments on this, you know, sincerely, I am interested in your comments. Isn't the better proof being able to do this and act this out if you have that required skill level? And you were talking about the different levels of chess a few minutes ago. Isn't the better thought, or at least an equal thought, that you can do this with your mouth on the spot? We've talked about that previously, but I heard you definitely say that an affidavit, that there is no better proof than the affidavit. I don't necessarily agree with that statement. Would you quibble with that or not?
I guess, you know what? You can have your own opinion. And
that's correct.
That's great. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, an affidavit that you execute is only executed by you. So now I'm not suggesting, as you have said in the past, well, for most people, it's better, they don't want to go through all this flack that they would have to go through on the spot, so therefore it's better for them to have done all this in writing. I'm just suggesting anything that you're doing in writing, doing it firsthand, comes before reducing it to writing. So if you're able to conduct yourself in a manner and hold a conversation with someone and come up with the necessary facts, isn't that at least better than or equal to the affidavit?
Well, yes, of course. Yeah. But most people, it really, really helps them to have the affidavit.
I'm not quibbling with that.
I really don't know where you're going with this. I'm stuck.
Well, I mean, from talking to me all this time and from the questions I've posed, you know, I would gather that you have some idea where I'm going with this, but when you then say, well, reiterate exactly what you're doing, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe you don't have the slightest
idea. I challenged you because I said, you've been on every call, just about every call, you've got all these questions, but you've never moved forward with doing an actual correction process through Michael, okay? And I challenged him. I said, hey, man, it's about time to get it done. And you said, well, you don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, fill me in. What are you doing then?
Mm-hmm. I get your question. I understand it. But I would respectfully suggest to you, as you've said in the past, you know, there's likely more than one way to do this. Anyway, let's not belabor that point. What I wanted to tell you was that the other day I had occasion for an issue that has nothing to do with what we're talking about here to attend a mayor and council meeting. And whenever I attend a meeting like that, I always give an opening statement, which may be about a minute, regarding American National, regarding the fact that I'm appearing before a corporate service body. I'm not appearing before the Republic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, anyway, because of a report that a police officer gave to that mayor and council meeting later on in the meeting, and he said something interesting about he was going to be teaching a citizens' rights course. So after the meeting, I told the mayor that I would like to meet this police officer because I didn't know exactly where to find him. It ends up he's a commanding officer, so to speak. And I'd like to speak to him about that. So he took me to his office, and I sat down and talked to him for a short time, and the conversation will be continued. But his reasoning, he told me that he admits that he knows that we have a Constitution and that the Fourth Amendment can be somewhat annoying and perplexing to him, but, you know, that they have to be under it, and that he agrees that the foundation of this country is a republic and that their service corporation is simply an overlay. But his reasoning
for being able to attack his law. And again, this conversation is going to be continued with this gentleman. His reasoning for attaching their law to all of this is that he knows that he took. There's a lot of background noise.
It's not on your end.
Oh, I don't hear any noise like that. All right, anyway, his reasoning is that he knows that he took an oath to the corporate government, not to the republic. And therefore, any living, breathing man or woman that he sees, he believes that he is responsible for exercising that law as the corporate government uses it. Now, of course, I told him that I adamantly disagreed with this, why I disagreed, et cetera, and the conversation would be continued. But I thought it was interesting, and then something was said about the blue list, and he said, oh, you know something about the blue list, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought that it was interesting that his reasoning was that, hey, I took an oath to the corporate government, therefore that's the only government that I operate under. So anyway.
All righty. So was that set on the record?
No. This was in his office after the mayor and council meeting. Oh, no, it would have been.
Too bad you didn't record it. Anyway, can we move on, Charlie?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you bringing that to us. Next is Charlie, followed by Michael from Las Wages. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, just briefly, I wanted to thank Jennifer for jumping on. She actually answered the question, Michael, you and GW and others, you know, likely do not have a corporate driver's license, if that's what you call it, because, you know, they now are requiring, and I think Oklahoma is one of the holdout states, but in New York, and Jennifer was referring to what's called a real ID. And when I use that term, you had used it earlier with the passport card, but the state agencies are requiring that you have a real ID. But she answered my question in that apparently Oklahoma and other states must apparently continue to offer a vanilla license, shall we say, that doesn't have, I don't know what it has in it. That was kind of my question. What's in the real ID? What are they, et cetera. But the illegal aliens get the vanilla variety. So anyway, thank you, Jennifer. And I do appreciate all the questions and learn a lot. So that's it. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Next is Michael from. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
My question was for Kent, because Kent has talked about this guy in New York that has a method for getting lawyers kicked off or kicked out of the court for impropriety or not being duly sworn or whatever. And that's to me is anything you can do to disrupt their livelihood is a plus. But anyway, I don't know if he's going to get any more information on that or not.
Well, I've unmuted Kent just right now. Do you have a direct question for him?
Yes, Kent. The guy in New York that got the lawyer kicked out of the courtroom, what procedure or method did he use to have him dismissed?
I'm still working on getting further information from him.
Okay.
I know it's taking too long, but some of these things take a long time before you can get what you need.
Yeah, that's true.
I understand that. I deal with a trust fund every week, and they have people that are out. Nobody else can handle the function that those people do, and you're waiting on them to come back to work from whatever purpose they're doing. But the other thing I wanted to add was Kent's right about the guy taking an oath to the corporate, because everything they do, they're conducting under UCC code, without a doubt. And it's Admiralty Maritime Law, but they don't want to admit that. But what they're operating under is the UCC code, and it's full-blown. And it has been a progressive effort over many decades to get this in and get everybody using it. They did the same thing in 1774, by the way. The king's agents had their appointees who were supposed to be elected, but then they got appointed. And finally, the people had enough, and 200 or 300 would come out, and then thousands would come out, and they'd remove them from the wouldn't let them come in the courtroom. They would remove them from an office and make them read in the street 10 or 15 times that they were resigning their position, and they apologized. And these people were all armed, by the way. And that was a prelude to 1776.
Mm.
Michael.
I'm here.
Yeah. Oh, no, the other Michael. I don't know
Go
if
ahead.
He was on the call. Yeah, I don't know if you were on the call last Tuesday on John's call, but I did ask him about FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, and how that might play into what this other gentleman was talking about with the removal of attorneys from the courtroom and from cases. And John stated that he was, just like the acts with Homeland Security, that he was adamantly disagreed with these acts, and they're certainly not more important than the Constitution, but that he did agree, and I don't think I'm putting words in his mouth, he did agree that FARA could be used, if you knew how to use it, to do the kind of thing that this gentleman in New York was talking about, but that he was not necessarily in favor of using a law. So I asked him to if I could characterize what he was saying, and that is if he did not agree with the use of a law, even though it might be effective in disrupting the other side, was he actually saying that we should not stoop to that level of using something that we couldn't in good conscience or morally, or I guess in a spiritual form, agree with. And he said that that was a good way to sum it up. So he was not adding anything last Tuesday night. Again, if you weren't on the call, he wasn't adding anything to my question about specifically whether and how what this gentleman in New York was talking about, FARA would be used to remove an attorney from a case. But I am pursuing the matter.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just wondering, because you're in an adversarial position, a really severe adversarial position in their courts, because they're operating a de facto government, and they don't want to recognize you. They want to recognize the straw man, that you're a part of their corporation, a franchise, and that they have total control of you.
Mm-hmm.
So anything we can do to gain an advantage when we're – it's like a game of chess. Oh, well, I'm not going to move my pawn over here so you can take it, and then I can checkmate you, because that wouldn't be fair. There's nothing fair in their system. If it was, then it would all been brought out a long time ago. This is what we're doing. Everything they've done has been underhanded.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a deception. And it's an intended deception. I mean, every one of these people at the DOJ and the FBI right now that have had their hands on all of this stuff that's coming out, every one of them should be locked up, drawn in quarters, sent to Gitmo. I mean, they are violating the law, and they're going to get away with it. But if it were you, you'd be sitting in a dark cell somewhere like those people in the insurrection. Did any of them people have guns? Were any of them firing weapons? That wasn't an insurrection. They want to see an insurrection? I can show them what an insurrection looks like. They wouldn't like it.
Well,
that wasn't an insurrection.
Mm-hmm. No. I want to make a general comment here based on, you know, the tone of this call and how it went when I was asking some questions. There are many people in this country that are starting to see that there is something seriously wrong
and that something needs to be done about this. However, we're never going to get everybody to agree, even among people that have been doing this for a long time, on how it should be done or exactly what should be done and when it should be done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what we need to have is respect for everybody, and we need to listen. As long as people are making sense and asking reasonable questions, we need to, to my view of this, we need to listen to this. We need to continue to ask those questions and analyze what is being said and respect each other, even if we don't necessarily all agree that we have to do the same thing at a certain point in time. I think people should continue to come on the calls, whether they necessarily take the action that's being promoted, if you will, in quotes, I'll put that word, promoted on the call, or whether or not this is just a learning experience for them while they're doing something else related to this, obviously. I think we need to listen to all of this and hear all this, and I actually think that that's one of the benefits, and I say this very truthfully and honestly, I think that that's one of the benefits of Michael's calls, that people can say something that doesn't necessarily agree or something that challenges what is said, which is not tolerated in some places. And I think that's a serious deficiency when only the people that are running the call can have their opinion and everybody else has to go along with that. So I applaud the openness that ordinarily goes on here, and I think that that should continue. And that's about all I want to say on that issue. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Michael, is there anything else that you want to say at this time?
Well, a lot of people live in fear. And the other thing is all these actors out there, employees, whatever you want to call them, Leos, representatives, lawyers, they're all indoctrinated, compartmentalized, and their whole life has been gone. They've gone down the yellow brick road, okay? And they're like Dorothy. They're trying to click their heels, but nothing's it's not going to work. But they still believe in it, okay? And until you disrupt it so bad that they get rid of that belief and they say, well, we're wrong in what we're doing, and here's the right way, then you're not going to – you're going to be fighting an uphill battle. And I've told other – I have a friend of mine. He's a crane operator. I said, you can't get enough guns, and you can't get enough, so stop thinking like that, and enough ammunition. And I said, and who makes – at some point, yeah, if they push us over the edge, you're going to have to fight back. But until then, don't even think like that. I said, there's an answer, and the answer is in the book that tells you that you're in spiritual warfare, and there you need to pray over this and turn it over, because he will take care of it. He'll put coals on their heads until they, well, like Wilson. Wilson admitted at the end that he ruined his country. Roosevelt admitted in the end he ruined his country. Churchill, who was bought off during World War II by the Rothschilds, he admitted in the end that he led his country. We fought the wrong enemy. We went down the wrong path, but it was too late by then, because not one bomb dropped on Windsor Castle, by the way. But those areas of London that were bombed totally out, guess what kind of real estate it's worth today? That was all a planned event, as all wars are. That's my comment for the night.
All right, thank you. Okay. And then lastly is Norm. Go ahead. You're back, and you're the last one here. I'm going to check Freedom's Radio while you're doing that.
Yeah, my question is, once I change my status, I go overseas, and can I use my normal U.S. passport?
Okay, so when you correct your status with us, when you go through the process and we help you go through it, Norm, the passport, you're going to get a completely new passport. You're going to go through a process where you're actually going to hand in your old passport, and you're going to get a brand new one. And hopefully, and I hope Michael agrees with this, because I'm getting everybody else done this way. is that it will be a fast passport process, a three-hour process at one of the facilities, hopefully that's very close to you, Norman. And that brand new passport will have all the information uploaded to the back channel that the administrators see, so that when you go through the airport, you go through customs, you fly overseas, it has the updated information that basically they're going to treat you different than they treat the average U.S. citizen. Got lots and lots of testimonies with my other group that I do. I do a number of different groups. They're probably around six right now. And one of the groups is a international law firm that sends me clients that are U.S. citizens that are trying to expatriate. And I end up talking them into correcting their status instead of expatriating. Okay. I brought up, Kevin Costner's nephew, okay, on this call. And he was one of them that was searching for, possibly expatriating and procuring another passport. And instead of expatriating, he decided to correct his status instead, and he's very, very happy for now doing that. And so is his wife.
The reason I ask is I'm a retired airline pilot, and over the last number of years when I was active, I was international, and I lived in a number of different foreign countries. And these immigration are people that are in the government. When they know what a U.S. passport looks like, if I show them something that's totally non-conforming, you might say, to U.S. passport,
they'll say,
what is this?
Norman, it's going to look exactly like the passport you have right now.
Okay.
On the outside of the passport itself, let me make this loud and clear. It will not change. Nothing on the passport when you look at it will change other than the numbers, okay, because there will be brand new numbers. You're going to have a brand new passport number. It's only the information that's run on a computer screen that the immigration people get to see, that the natural, the people that check you through, customs, people like that, or a cop alongside the road, when he gets into his vehicle and he runs it on his computer screen, he's got access to that screen. Okay. And by the way, they want to hide this, so they don't let your passport that's corrected is going to look exactly like everybody else's passport. Okay.
Okay. That brings up a question in my mind. Okay. So if I go to Belize and check in through Belize immigration to enter the country, and they run that number, they're not going to know the difference that's not a U.S. passport issued by the U.S. government that I have now. It's going to be
Your name's going to look the same. The name on the screen's going to look the same, only this time it's going to say, have a note from the U.S. State Department right on the screen that says your name, and it says do not arrest, do not detain, do not search.
Same as diplomatic. Okay.
You got it, brother. That's how they hide it. That's exactly how they hide it. Yep.
Ask and answer. Thank you very much.
You got it.
All right. All right. On Freedoms Radio, someone wrote in, when you're at the airport, is passport sufficient when they ask for your driver's license? GW?
I'm sorry, I'm getting a. I just got a. Somebody tried to call in here, and I have to exit out of this. Sorry about that. Okay. What did you say? I'm sorry, I had.
No problem. When you're at the airport.
One of my clients was calling. Yeah.
When you're at the airport, is the passport sufficient when they ask for a driver's license?
When you're at the airport, is the passport sufficient when they ask for a driver's license? Is that how the question's constructed?
That was the question. Written on the back. I have, like, all I can do is read it to you.
Well, it's weird. That's a weird question, okay, the way it's stated. I don't know what they're actually asking. Is a passport sufficient as a say that again?
When you're at the airport.
Airport, yeah.
And I suppose you're asked to produce identification. Is the passport sufficient when they ask for your driver's license?
Oh, you mean can you give your passport instead of giving your driver's license if you're at the airport?
Right.
Absolutely. That's what you want to do. Yes, that's what you want to do. You don't. You should never, ever have to use your driver's license at an airport. Unless you're renting a car, okay? That's different. You're renting a car, they're going to ask you for a valid driver's license. And by the way, this is, when you're renting a car, you're going through a corporation that has a bunch of guidelines and everything, and you're not going to get away with renting a car with a passport card. Ain't going to happen because their insurance companies will not let that happen. So, anyway, you're going to have to use your license for that. All right.
All righty. So, I want to thank you, GW. Any closing comments, sir?
That's it for tonight.
All righty. I want to thank you all for joining us this week. I remind you to come tomorrow night for the next episode of the sitcom As the Stomach Churns. And this is where John will be giving you an update on what's going on with Mr. T, as well as any other questions that you may have at that time. So I look forward to you then. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.